right here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
This is listener-supported public radio in Northwest Indiana. 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. WLPR FM, Lowell.
Today on Off Mic, elections and COVID, two of the dominant stories this year, continue to make news. First, on the election side, as President-elect Joe Biden begins the transition to the White House, we talk about the futures of two prominent Hoosiers, one on the way out, one could be on the way in, Mike Pence and Pete Buttigieg, and a local sports writer is trying to do his part in trying to save humanity and taking part of a new COVID-19 vaccine. And can a casino open during a pandemic? The Hard Rock Casino in Gary says it can. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, Northwest Indiana Bureau reporter for WBEZ in Chicago. It's been nearly a week since America woke up to the news that Democrat Joe Biden won the presidential race. But President Trump isn't ready to accept that and is still fighting the results. Since it's not likely to work, we thought we'd take a look at the possible futures of two prominent Hoosiers, Vice President Mike Pence and former South Bend mayor and former Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg. Speaking with me is Andrew Downs of the Michael Downs Center for Politics at Purdue University, Fort Wayne. Andrew, is Mike Pence's political career over or no?
We have to remember what it was that got him there to begin with, and that was very good relationships with social conservatives. I'm fairly certain those are still there, and even if they have softened a little bit, all he has to do is remind people there are three new members of the Supreme Court and that he was there helping to push all three of them. And that will probably put him probably back in pretty good stead with those same social conservatives. That does not mean he's a lock by any stretch of the imagination, but he does have a core that he gets to start with. The question is, of all the other people who may decide to run, and it's not a short list, is he able to put together a solid enough group that he can seem like a force early on and then simply continue to outpace other people or outlast other people? If he goes into the first couple of months of serious campaigning and is suddenly the, 10th, 11th favorite candidate, he probably can't come back from that the way somebody else could. But if he's in the top few, then I think he can be a legitimate candidate for president. The problem is he has to worry about, Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis and Tim Scott. And I mean, it's just a long list of individuals who will try to run, I think.
Do you think, you think there's any kind of desire or movement afoot to have Mike Pence run for president? Let's say Trump was successful for a second term. Do you think he would have automatically been the next logical choice to become president or at least to run for president?
When you are the vice president, I think that people start with the assumption you are running. You'll have to remember that Dick Cheney pretty much said, I'm not going to be running for president. And that was part of what made him attractive as a vice presidential candidate and as vice president. However, Mike Pence has never said that. I can't imagine Mike Pence ever saying that. And so there's just this inevitability of vice presidents seeking the office. If Trump were to be president for four more years, I think that people would have to see Mike Pence as a viable option. But there's a dynamic here that we've not really had to experience before, and that is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been unusual from the word go. He has been not following the normal playbook as president. And now, whether it's 4 years from now or not, who does he like as a presidential candidate? Because he could very easily shut off an awful lot of avenues, not only for Mike Pence, but for others. And more importantly, open up avenues for people he likes more than Mike Pence.
including himself.
Exactly. That, you know, people keep forgetting that, you know, it's not, you are able to serve 8 years, doesn't have to be consecutive years. So he certainly could choose to run. Obviously, any of his children, he might point to them and say, this is the next person who needs to run. And that certainly is something the Republicans will have to contend with.
All right. But you certainly do not see Pence as being done, even if President Trump is not successful in his reelection bid.
I don't think that anybody should see Mike Pence as done in elected life at all. He has been the vice president for 4 years. He's been a governor. He's been a member of the United States House of Representatives and a rather high ranking member within his party there. He has a solid base of support. Theoretically, he already has a 50 state network, and that's not something that everybody has. So there's a lot of reason to think that he is a legitimate and viable candidate. He has a couple of strikes against him. And some of them go back a ways. His legislative record was not particularly strong as a member of the U.S. House. He was, as Donald Trump liked to say, about to be embarrassed in a gubernatorial race in 2016 when President Trump rescued him. That might be a bit of an overstatement, but that's the narrative around that. And he's been the vice president for the last 4 years. As some people have said, it's hard to get the Trump stink off of you. That's not something that I've made up. That's what other people have said. So you're stuck with all the negatives. What makes him unique, though, is that he was not necessarily immersed in all of those things and certainly demonstrated some disagreement with the president from a moral standpoint in ways that, you know, might make it possible for him to spend more time with the wins than the losses of the Trump administration.
Well, let me ask you this. Now with Pete Buttigieg, you know, he certainly has been on a lot of the morning talk shows. He's very popular. He himself, of course, ran for president, former South Bend mayor. Where do you see his future at?
He's 38 years old, and I think he has a very bright future in front of him. Whether that includes further elected office or not remains to be seen. You know, when you talk about running for president, it's a fairly small number of people who've been successful at it, obviously. Even when you're talking about running for mayor of South Bend, it's not a long list of people who have been successful at that. With him, his age, of course, was one of the benefits. It was a fresh perspective. He still would have a fresh perspective, say, 4 years from now, if for some reason there is an open primary on the Democratic side. Even 8 years from now, he still would be a relatively young individual. So that's not written off by any stretch of the imagination. How does he position himself for that, I think, is the better question. And he, I don't think, has the resume and some would argue the gravitas to go after any of the top tier cabinet level positions, Secretary of State or Defense or anything like that. But I do think that it's possible to think of him as somebody in that next tier down, whether that would be something like HUD or Veterans Affairs, which, you know, don't get quite the press and attention that the top tier positions do. He may decide, though, instead of being the secretary of one of those lower tiered cabinet positions, it's better to be an undersecretary in one of the big ones, you know, undersecretary in Treasury or something like that. Those are all options for him. But he is part of a new generation, and maybe the podcast that he's starting to do now, maybe the books, plural, that he's written are the way for him to continue to have a presence on the national scale. If he's able to influence any of the elections in 2022, that could set him up for a run in 2024. So he is, of the people who are being talked about for future office, he is part of a generation, I think, who don't necessarily have to follow the path that had been the obvious path historically.
Let me ask you this, though. Have the Democrats in Indiana missed an opportunity to tap into his popularity and trying to help rebuild the party since, you know, the Democratic candidate for governor in Indiana just got slammed by Eric Holcomb in his reelection bid? And it just seems like Democrats in Indiana have been kind of left for dead.
That is certainly the way a lot of folks are describing the Democratic Party in Indiana right now. The chairman obviously announced he's not going to run for re-election, so there's an opening right there. What I think is somewhat interesting here is that Mayor Pete could theoretically run for governor, and that would not necessarily be viewed as a step down in many people's eyes. But if he were to want to, say, run for chair of the party, I think a lot of people would see that as a step down. You don't go from being sort of a finalist or quasi-finalist for chair of the DNC, somebody who did well in Iowa and in a couple of primaries, and then suddenly become chair of your state party. If he did that, there would be so much pressure on him to rack up wins and rack them up in a big, big hurry if he was hoping to use that as some sort of a stepping stone to the future. I don't know that he is the person who would have been able to or is able to revitalize the Indiana Democratic Party. The party itself clearly has to do some soul searching to figure out what it is that's attractive to people right now. When you look at the way, for example, Joe Donnelly lost, the way Evan Bayh lost, that profile may not be the profile that works any longer. Christina Hale, a lot of people thought that she was going to be part of the new profile. She certainly did well, but obviously didn't win. And so people may say that's not the profile that's going to win. Maybe Pete Buttigieg is the profile that folks are looking for in the state. But, you know, there's a risk to running for governor in 4 years in Indiana, especially if he were to lose. And this would be a very, very difficult seat to pick up for him.
You know, I'm not really trying to disparage Mayor Pete Buttigieg. And he is, you know, it just seems like right now, though, he's just riding on that national wave of popularity before really having not done much. I mean, he's been the mayor of South Bend. And I mean, right now it just feels like a bunch of smoke and mirrors until he was to, you know, become a member of Congress or maybe run for Senate. You know, I certainly think if he ran for Congress, that wouldn't be considered a step down, or you think it would be?
No, I don't think it would be. And I think you're right. For a lot of people, they say, okay, great. He was mayor of South Bend, seemed to have done a pretty nice job there, had a job in the private sector for a little while. But really, when you look at his resume, pretty thin on the whole. And then he shows up and talks to people, and you suddenly realize, wow, that's a thoughtful, talented individual. Maybe the thin resume is made up, or he makes up for the thin resume by just a native intelligence and inquisitiveness that not everybody has. And let's face it, when you're running for elected office, sometimes it's the personality that people are getting behind. It's not necessarily the resume that people are getting behind. You could make an argument in some respects, Bill Clinton maybe shouldn't have been a good presidential candidate, having been the governor of Arkansas. Not exactly, you know, one of the people would say premier states for developing a reputation for knowing international affairs and great economic development, educational systems, those sorts of things. No, not disparaging Arkansas in any way, shape or form. It was his personality that did it. People would say the same thing about Barack Obama. They could say to a lesser degree the same thing about Ronald Reagan. He at least was able to say, I was governor of California, which is a, you know, really, really large state. There is, though, you could think of the window of opportunity that exists. And you might say that the mayor's window might be closing, because in another 4 years, he will, heavens, be in his 40s. And what will he have done for the last 4 years to continue to expand that reputation and that resume of success? If he's not able to point to a bunch of things, then yeah, he's the guy who didn't quite make it 4 years ago or 8 years ago or whenever that happens to be.
So just in your if you have to prognosticate, where do you think he ends up? Cabinet level position with President-elect Joe Biden, or something like you just said, maybe something just below that?
I think that it's pretty reasonable to think that he might have a second tier cabinet opportunity, an undersecretary position in one of the upper tiers. But I also think that there's the possibility for him to be some sort of a special advisor, in other words, a non-confirmed position, something that allows him to continue to be out and about and communicating with people, developing a base of support, not only for him, but for the initiatives of the administration. I think any one of those would be a possibility.
And that was Andrew Downs, head of the Michael Downs Center for Politics at Purdue University at Fort Wayne. And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Casinos in Indiana continue to take a hit due to the pandemic, just like so many other industries. Revenues are down for traditional gaming, but not for sports betting. Joining me to talk about casinos in Indiana is Ed Feigenbaum, who covers the industry for Indiana Gaming Insight. Ed, looks like sports wagering is going through the roof in Indiana.
Well, there are two different things. You know, one is obviously the casinos and one is sports wagering. And in terms of the second one first, the sports wagering, yeah, that was quite a spectacular report. You know, we're up about 150% over the year, and you know, we've managed to go from just breaking $200 million in September to, you know, breaking $230 million in October. But at the same time, you know, there's some pretty obvious reasons for it. You know, you had the NBA championship, you had the World Series, you had the opening of Big Ten college football, and you know, obviously that's huge in Indiana, and Indiana benefited from being able to get some bettors coming across from Illinois, where you can't bet on Illinois collegiate teams. So, you know, perhaps folks that wanted to bet on Northwestern or at the University of Illinois came across to Horseshoe Casino Hammond or Maristar Casino East Chicago or even Tropicana Evansville, you know, for some of the folks, you know, downstate a little bit closer to Urbana-Champaign. So, you know, there's some explanations for that, but, you know, it certainly bodes well, and I think that as the football season proceeds and bettors realize that they're in pretty good shape this year, because a little bit of the house edge seems to have dissipated because of the lack of home field advantage, because of no or limited crowds at football games, professional and collegiate. Bettors are thinking, hey, you know, this may be the best time for me to make a wager, because, you know, I may actually have a little bit of an edge over the books themselves. So that may be encouraging some wagers. As for the casinos, you know, it's a little bit different a story. The $166.6 million in October win continues a kind of a disappointing streak of over the year declines in each month. It started back in March, obviously, with the pandemic, and this constitutes the longest such streak that we've seen of over the year declines in each month since basically a period from late 2012 to late 2014, and that one was kind of caused by the opening of the Ohio land-based casinos and some of the racinos there right across the river. So that was the explanation then. We've seen a lot of properties that have not performed particularly well in the month of October. There were 9 properties that were down in revenue over the prior October. There were only 4 that were up. One of those that increased revenue over the year was on Lake Michigan, although 4 of the Lake Michigan properties were down. You know, it's really not a super encouraging month, and the fact that we've not seen an over-the-month gain since the pre-pandemic time, not since February, is also pretty discouraging. You know, you know you're not going to be able to compete against the prior year because of the capacity limits, the restrictions on play at table games with the limits on people per game and the plexiglass shields that players don't like, the inability to smoke. But the fact that we're not seeing improvement over the prior month is something that's a bit of a concern. On the other hand, October did have both the lowest percentage in real dollar over the month decline since before the pandemic. So if you're looking for a potential bright spot, you know, that could be it. But that's not something that, you know, really would stand out in an ordinary month, and it only stands out because it does stand out in a kind of a bleak month of revenues.
Let me ask you a basic question for non-sports bettors. Do you need to physically be in Indiana to place a sports bet?
Not not a yes, no question. If you are an Illinois resident, you can bet in Illinois at one of the retail facilities or through one of the online or mobile operators that's actually in operation in Illinois. Or if you want to come across to Indiana, or if you want to place a bet on an Illinois collegiate team, whether it's football or, you know, soon to be basketball, you have to physically, if you're coming from, you know, Chicago, whatever, cross the Skyway or, you know, I-94 or whatever, in order to be eligible to make a bet. And you also have to have the Indiana version of the app. If you are physically in the state of Indiana and you have an Indiana mobile or online app, you can wager as soon as the geolocation service, you know, pinpoints the fact that you are, you know, 1 foot over the place you need to be on the Skyway Bridge or something. Or you can continue on to Indiana and place a bet at the retail brick and mortar sports book at Horseshoe or Ameristar, or you can go a little bit further into to Michigan City to do so, because I don't believe that you're equipped yet at Majestic Star for retail sports book activity, and they're going to wait until Hard Rock Casino Northern Indiana opens to debut that. So if you want to bet via the app, you have to be physically present in Indiana and bet on one of the Indiana apps that you've registered for. If you want to bet at a retail sports book, you have to be physically present at that sports book in Indiana to bet.
Ed, let me ask you this. Do you think Chicago's warnings for its citizens not to visit Indiana due to climbing COVID-19 rates has an impact on Northwest Indiana casinos?
Yeah, it works both ways. Obviously, Indiana residents were effectively blackballed from coming up to Chicago, you know, this last month for a brief period. And when you turn the tape recorder off, I'll tell you my experience personally on it. I think it's more honored in the breach than anything else. But, you know, some states like Illinois are limiting the number of hours, curtailing the number of hours that the casinos can stay open in certain regions. You know, it's not statewide in Illinois, but, you know, your governor has done that on a region-by-region basis, depending upon the number of cases in that region. Indiana has not imposed any time restrictions on casino openings. The state of Massachusetts is closing all their casinos at 9:30 at night. Will Indiana eventually do that? I don't think so, just based on the fact that there seems to be no appetite for making any kind of further restrictions or requiring casinos to report COVID cases in employees, whether it's on an individual or collective basis. But there may also be some people in Illinois that might want to, you know, gamble. If they're a second shift worker, they might want to gamble at, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning, and they can't do that at their favorite property in Illinois. So they might come across to Indiana, regardless of COVID, or simply because of the COVID caused early closures at some of the Illinois properties. So it's there's a little bit more subtlety to the question than you might expect.
Ed, is there any concern with Hard Rock Casino opening in the next 4 months? There's got to be some concern during this pandemic for the opening of this new casino.
Sure. They're looking now at a second quarter 2021 opening. You know, obviously, at the award of the license, they were talking about, you know, perhaps a New Year's Eve 2020 opening, and no one really believed that was feasible at that point. And then certainly with the COVID issues, kind of hampering construction a little bit. Since then, you know, it was believed that it would be sometime in the first quarter, and, you know, second quarter is not a huge difference or delay or whatever. But I think at some point you have to say, all right, you believe that there's going to be a vaccine that's going to be available, that the vaccine, you know, will be effective and used by people, and, you know, all kinds of different businesses are looking at that and saying, okay, we don't believe that we're going to be back to whatever they might consider to be normal until after a vaccine is widely available. Casinos are no different. And in fact, you know, with the larger crowds, it may be a little bit more problematic. But you know, I think that we've also seen that since the reopening in Indiana in mid-June, that there hasn't been a lot of hesitation on the part of people to come to the casinos. And what they'd like to see is a little bit more loosening of the restrictions and be able to, you know, smoke and drink and eat, you know, on the casino floor like they used to. And I think that the further away that we get from, you know, any kind of surge, the better for the casinos, obviously. But I think that everybody's kind of keeping their fingers crossed about the vaccine. And, you know, you saw the stock market make a big jump on Monday after the announcement that the Pfizer vaccine seems to be 90% effective and, you know, could begin distribution toward the end of December on a limited basis. So obviously it's not an ideal situation, but you know, they have to deal with it. And it's not like they have stopped construction like some other smaller companies have in different states. And I think that as you look at what Hard Rock's facing in Terre Haute, for example, where they've not yet, you know, really begun construction of the casino, they've got the opportunity to draw up, to design a casino that would be, I don't want to say COVID-proof, but would certainly alleviate some of the concerns of some patrons, and that would be a little bit more amenable to any kinds of new pandemics and patronage during pandemics, just like we saw a change in school architecture and the hardening of K-12 schools after we saw so many school shootings. I think you're going to see and we saw it at airports after 9/11. You know, the Indianapolis International Airport is still the only major airport in the United States that was built, well, essentially designed and built after 9/11, and it took into account the 9/11 security requirements. And that's why that airport consistently gets, you know, top three, top five grades among travelers for, you know, the convenience, ease of access and everything. And I think you're going to see going forward, and the Terre Haute Casino may be the first one, the Hard Rock Casino there, may be the first one to be able to incorporate, you know, post-pandemic kinds of considerations into the design features, you know, whether it's changes in the HVAC, changes in the way that the table games are laid out, or the, you know, entire casino floor is laid out, you know, ceiling heights, modes, or the number and placement of the entry doors and exit doors, and all kinds of different things, you know, come into play when you're starting to think about how you can spread people out in a limited space and how you can keep people from necessarily interacting outside of their pods. You know, just like we're seeing it in all kinds of other things, you know, in restaurants, in theaters, in our daily lives right now.
Okay, Ed, just another very basic question for non-sports bettors like me. Since you said Illinoisans can't bet on Illinois collegiate teams, can Indiana residents bet on Indiana collegiate teams?
Damn straight. Yes, Indiana residents or anybody who's got an app in Indiana who's betting from within the friendly confines of the state of Indiana can bet on any of the Indiana collegiate teams that are eligible to be bet on. So that means, you know, essentially the Division I type teams. You know, you can't bet on the Hanovers and the DePauls and the Wabash Colleges, I don't believe. But, you know, you can certainly bet on, you know, Indiana University, Purdue University, University of Notre Dame, Ball State University, University of Evansville, those types of University of Southern Indiana, University of Indianapolis, Marion. Well, I'm not sure about Marion. Probably not Marion University.
All right. Well,
but yeah, the ones that we're all familiar with, yeah, you can bet in Indiana.
Ed, do the casinos get a boost from sports bettors coming to the property, or not much?
Yes, but the casinos were huge advocates of sports wagering in the legislative process, you know, a year and a half ago, because what they saw in sports wagering was that it attracts a younger demographic. And, you know, the casinos have been very worried over the past few years that, you know, their big demographic, the baby boomers, are starting to die out as a major demographic group. And it's very difficult to attract the younger demographic to come in and, you know, pull the lever on a slot machine or sit in front of a slot machine. And so they viewed this as an opportunity to bring in younger people to the casino for the excitement, the action in general. And they tried to, in the beginning, make some of their other offerings more attractive to the younger demographic. I think if you talk to the folks at Horseshoe Casino Hammond, for example, they started to introduce some more interactive kinds of gaming experiences, and those that would allow for multiple players as part of a, I think they call them like stadium seating type offerings, so that the generation that's more accustomed to dealing with each other on a social basis and more accustomed to video gaming, that type of thing, and people who are very comfortable you know, touch screens and things like that, would find that there are some pretty interesting, pretty cool gaming opportunities for them. And they were finding that they were bringing in these people when the sports wagering opportunities opened back in September of last year. And they were able to get some of these people to sign up for, you know, like the Caesars Rewards program and the other casino rewards programs that, you know, they can then market to these specific types of patrons. And they found, at least in the pre-pandemic period, you know, from September through February, that they were getting these people to return. Now, will some of them come back if they were Chicagoans who simply didn't have an opportunity to wager either in person or through a mobile app in Illinois? Will they come back across the border, you know, in a time of pandemic, as you had kind of questioned earlier? We just don't know yet, because we just don't know what the new normal is going to be.
And what are you hearing in terms of casinos in Indiana being transparent on doing as much as they can to protect their casino workers from COVID-19?
Yeah, the Unite Here people, the casino workers have been pretty vocal about that. They're not happy with the way that they've been treated necessarily by management. And that's a question that I've raised both directly and indirectly with the governor and the Indiana State Department of Health and the Indiana Governor's COVID-19 briefings. You know, I posed the question to Dr. Box about, you know, why they weren't making any kinds of special, or why they were essentially making special exceptions for casinos in some of the counties which were seeing larger outbreaks, when they were limiting gatherings of people, you know, to 150 or so, but the casinos were still wide open. And, you know, she kind of alluded to the fact that the casinos have protocols in place and they're working with the local health departments. And, you know, I also asked about reporting, you know, whether it would be valuable for the state to require, you know, special reporting of COVID cases at casinos, whether it involved employees or whether contact tracing traced back, you know, major outbreaks to the casinos. And she said that she didn't think the Department of Health needed to do that, and that the casinos were keeping in touch with the county health departments, and casino general managers have told me, hey, you know, we do whatever we need to do with the county health departments, and, you know, we comply fully. Well, it's easy to comply fully when there aren't, you know, some particularly strict reporting requirements, and there are, you know, essentially, you know, well, there is essentially nothing else that, that binds you to doing anything.
And that was Ed Feigenbaum of Indiana Gaming Insight. As we just heard, the pandemic can cause issues with casinos, but the new $300 million Hard Rock Casino in Gary is expected to open in the next 4 months. The casino is having a job fair next Tuesday and Thursday. Joining me to talk about that is Vice President for Human Resources for Hard Rock Casino Northern Indiana, Dawn Reynolds Pettit.
Sure. So we're excited, first of all, to bring the Hard Rock brand to Northern Indiana. Our casino is set to open late Q1 in 2021. So we're right around the corner. We're about four and a half months away from expected opening. And in prep for that, we are looking to bring on up to 800 new band members, so new team members with us, in prep for our opening late next quarter.
Tell me more about the job fair, Dawn.
Sure, yeah. We are hosting a number of different job fairs, as a matter of fact. So our first job fairs will be next week, November 17th and 19th, and that's where we're primarily going to be hiring for individuals for our dealer school. So we're going to be hiring individuals that we will bring in to train to be dealers. And then in January, we will be hosting two additional job fairs, January 18th and 21st. And those are going to be for all the other positions in the casino. So that's going to be anywhere from culinary to hospitality to finance to service, and back of house support as well. So human resources, IT, and other professional spots.
And Dawn, where is the job fair being held?
Sure. The job fairs, all four of them, will be at the Majestic Star Pavilion. That's in Gary at 1 Buffington Harbor Drive in Gary, Indiana. And there'll be a lot of directional signage to point individuals in the right direction. We are asking to guarantee a spot and to ensure that we're able to follow safe and sound procedures to keep everybody safe and well in light of COVID, that individuals apply in advance, and then we will send them personal invites to secure their spot for the hiring event.
Dawn, are there any concerns about the opening of the casino during a pandemic?
No, I mean, the beautiful thing about being able to move forward in a time like this is that we have the opportunity to create an environment that allows for individuals to be safe and sound. And so there's a number of protocols and procedures and things that we are building in right now that will allow us to open safely and continue to provide services to our community and to our customers and guests within a COVID environment, as well as keeping our employees safe, obviously.
And Dawn, with so many casinos around, so much competition, what will be unique about this new Hard Rock Casino in Gary?
Sure. So I think one of the coolest things about this new casino is that it brings with it the Hard Rock brand. And the Hard Rock brand has, you know, been around for over 45 years. It's in 70 countries. And so the brand itself is extremely strong. It's extremely diversified. And it's going to have a number of offerings. So in addition to 80 table games and over 1,600 slot machines, it's going to have some awesome food offerings, including a steakhouse. It's going to have what Hard Rock originally started with is the Hard Rock Cafe, so a restaurant that's going to be in it, noodle bar. We're going to have a Constant Grind coffee shop and some other offerings as well. And I think that being able to bring in a cool and established brand right now into the market is as important as what it's going to be able to offer to the community, which is, you know, in a time where things can be uncertain, and we know 2020 has definitely been that way, we're bringing in 800 additional jobs into our surrounding community and into Northern Indiana. And for me, that's that's really important. And obviously Hard Rock stands behind that and continuing to grow and expand and offering great career opportunities for those individuals that are interested in becoming a band member with us.
And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Community Hospital in Munster announced this week that it will be receiving soon a new vaccine from Pfizer. It will be one of five hospitals in Indiana to receive the vaccine. But there are other vaccines that are now in the trial stage, one from Johnson & Johnson. The drug maker is actually recruiting 60,000 participants to take part in a trial for the vaccine. And one of those who is participating is from Northwest Indiana, and this is Mike Hutton. Mike, welcome to Off Mic.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Now, a lot of people may recognize the name Mike Hutton. Mike Hutton is no stranger to longtime readers who know Mike as an award-winning sports reporter with the Post Tribune. He's reported on Notre Dame football, local high school football and basketball. He's done it all. But this is a new role for you, Mike. You're trying to save the world in this.
Yeah, I volunteered before the trial. I just thought, you know, I knew that they needed people. It's not easy to recruit people. And I just thought, you know, I wanted to help out. And so this week I went and actually got the vaccine, or perhaps didn't, because half the people get the vaccine and half the people get a placebo.
So how did you find out about this trial that was going on?
Well, it's in Valpo, and it's through the name of the company is called Binac Research, and actually the doctor that runs it is my brother-in-law. So that's basically how I found out about it. But it's he's been out there kind of on social media, and he's had a story about him. His particular company or their research, they're looking for to get 1,000 participants from around the area. And so, as you might know, this was the trial. This was one of the this trial was stopped last month for a couple of weeks after someone got sick. It turns out that the person that got sick it wasn't related to the vaccine, so they just resumed it about 2 weeks.
I see. You know, Mike, I mean, a lot of people, you still hear a lot of people concerned with taking vaccines. And people are saying, look, if a vaccine is available, I'm not taking it. Why do you not have any of those fears? In fact, you're participating in a vaccine that it's in a trial stage right now. Why don't you have any of those fears?
You know, there's a little bit of fear, I guess, when you go in there and, you have to sign off sorts of disclosures, and you know they make the risks available to you. But I just feel like they've already done thousands of vaccines, and they've only had one person that's gotten sick, and that person didn't get sick because of the vaccine. I mean, there's a lot of very strict rules they have about, if people get sick, about stopping or pausing the studies. They pay you, too. That's the other thing. You get paid. So there's that incentive, too. And, it's a combination of, hey, I can maybe help humanity. I think it's a very, very low risk that you're going to have, some sort of problem or get ill from the vaccine and see, they compensate you. So it's, those three things, I think, were part of the reason that I decided to do it. Plus the fact that I knew that they were having trouble
recruiting people.
They need volunteers.
Right.
Because there is a lot of fear out there, and there are a lot of people that they don't want to do it, and that's completely okay. I mean, I understand.
Right. You know, Mike, COVID-19 has impacted so many people and so many industries. How has it impacted your ability to do your job as a sports writer?
It's been interesting. I cover football games with a mask on. I can't go into a press box anymore for the most part. I have to sit in stands. I no longer do, I do very few in-person interviews. I used to do, I probably do 50-50 in terms of in-person and on the phone prior to COVID-19. And as you know, sometimes when you interview a person in person, you can get them to open up more, and sometimes you can get a little better interview.
Right.
Because of that, because of COVID-19, I don't do it. There's been a lot of cancellations with football games. We sit around all week, and we have to monitor who might be playing and who's not. Obviously, the uptick in the schools has been pretty significant in the last month or so. So it's become very precarious. And, going forward, I think basketball is going to be even more of a challenge because it's inside and, it's winter and all the scientists are saying, look, this is going to get worse, not going to get better until we can, get a vaccine out there that works.
Mike, has COVID-19 impacted anybody close to you or impacted your life in any way?
Yeah, I've had relatives that have gotten it. I've had friends that have gotten it. Wow. I don't know anybody personally that's gotten seriously ill from it or died, which thankfully. But my wife's a nurse, so she was taking care of COVID responders early on. She hasn't been lately. And it's definitely it's a big part of everybody's life now, and there's just no way around it.
That's right. That's right. And I understand that your wife does work in an ICU unit at the University of Chicago Hospitals, correct?
Correct.
How has that impacted just your interaction with your wife? And it's got to be we do know that hospital staffs are just really at stress levels because of the impact of COVID-19's having on hospital systems. How has that made for life in your household?
It was in the first like two or three months, like maybe through May, there was a lot of, we sort of tried to keep our distance because she was actually working in the COVID unit and she would come home and she would have to throw her clothes into the washing machine right away. There's a lot of stress for her. That's a very difficult situation to be under. 12 hours, you have to wear the garments and a lot of the personal protective gear, which can be, really difficult when you're on your feet, it gets hot, it's just not an easy thing to do. But since she has actually worked in the COVID unit since I think she's worked once or twice, but since about June. And, I feel comfortable being around you because I know at the University of Chicago, they're very, very good about giving them personal protective equipment.
Right.
They've done a great job. They get the N95 masks. They have plenty of them. They have, it's just been a first rate sort of effort by them to keep their people protected. And there's very strict guidelines all the medical personnel have to follow in terms of wearing masks, wearing goggles, and wearing personal protective equipment.
We're speaking with Mike Hudden, sports writer with the Post Tribune of Northwest Indiana, longtime award-winning writer with the Post Tribune. He's actually a participant in a new vaccine through Johnson & Johnson's. And Mike, when did you take the vaccine?
I took it on Tuesday. So, let me just tell you a little bit about it. So, the study is 2 years long. The only thing that you have to do is take the vaccine. The only sort of invasive part of it is taking the vaccine. And after that, they give you a diary that you have to fill out every Tuesday or Monday and Thursday, and that you basically have to take your temperature and record your symptoms. If you have symptoms, you have to record them, and if not, you just say you don't have symptoms. And then you have to go for a follow-up in 4 weeks. And then there's subsequent follow-ups that have become less frequent over time. And if they approve a vaccine, so they can't tell you if you're part of the placebo part of the vaccine or if you actually got the vaccine until the study is over. However, there's the Pfizer vaccine, which is out in the market, which apparently preliminary studies at 90% success rate, seems like it's going to be hitting the market in the next month or two.
Right.
If that becomes available, then they will tell the participants right away whether they actually got the vaccine or didn't, so they can be eligible to go and actually.
Have you felt any symptoms or anything as a result of taking the vaccine?
No symptoms at all. Yeah, none for me.
All right. What do you tell people who, of course, Pfizer is coming out, like you said, with their vaccine, they're saying that's a 90% success rate. What do you tell people who are apprehensive of taking a vaccine? Obviously, you have some apprehension, but you're actually even in this trial period. Do you think it's worth taking? And let's say it comes back that you actually took the placebo, then would you take the actual vaccine if you think that it's effective?
Absolutely. I'll take once it's approved and out there, I'll take the vaccine. I just think that we got a lot of science and, about 100 years of, developing vaccines for certain diseases. And, I just think that I just trust the scientists. That's all. I mean, that's all I can say. I just trust the scientists and the doctors. I always get a flu shot every year.
Wow. You're better than me.
Yeah, I get a flu shot. I mean, well, my wife's a medical professional. Like, she's required to get a flu shot. Right? Yeah. So it's a big part of our sort of something that we emphasize. And
all right. Well, Mike Hutton is a sports reporter with the Post Tribune of Northwest Indiana. Mike, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And that is all the time we have for today's episode. I'd like to thank all my guests. And you can hear this show again as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'd like to thank my producers, Jose Rodriguez, Dee Donson, and Tom Maloney. For me, Michael Puente, have a great weekend and watch for Walking Under Those Ladders today. It is Friday the 13th.